The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
You don't want it, you don't need it, but you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
Good snap, good hold. Kick, perfect. And the Broncos have come to Buffalo. And they're going to leave with a win. 24-22 to get to 4-5.
A record-setting 5 games ended on Sunday and a walk-off field goal. No NFL week had ever seen 5 games end with a field goal going through the upright with zeros on the clock. We'll make that record 6 now, because last night's Week 10 finale ended with Will Lutz booting a game-winning field goal after he had missed the previous attempt, but there were 12 men on the field for Buffalo. The game last night was not pretty. It's not going into Canton, but there were some really interesting strategic and decision-making moments at the end of that game, which I will get to here momentarily. The show is always presented by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name. They will take very good care of you, including giving you a free estimate. John Keim on the show today. 2 segments with John. We'll talk to John about, obviously, the team right now, Sam Howell, Eric Bieniemy, what the hell is wrong with the defense. But we'll also discuss Josh Harris and ownership and, you know, where they are right now in what we believe will be a regime change at the end of this season. You know, are they making progress towards that? We'll ask John that coming up. Starting in the next segment. I do have a Sam Howell question to pose to all of you, but also to myself for an answer here in the opening segment. But I wanted to start real quickly with the Monday night game last night, because there was an end-of-game situation that was very interesting, and I'll get to that in a moment. But first of all, you know, Denver has won 3 in a row. They're 4-5. It was only a month and a half ago where Denver was thought to be one of the 2, 3, 4 worst teams in the league. They allowed 36 points per game. It was a record pace over the first 5. Remember, they gave up 35 to Washington and then 70 to Miami. They appeared to be the worst defense in the history of the NFL. Over the last 4 games, they're allowing just 16.8 points per game. Man, this NFL, you can never be sure of what you think you're seeing and that it's going to be permanent, because it does change. 36 points per game over their first 5, 16.8 points per game over their last 4, and they played in their last 2, Buffalo and Kansas City. They've won 3 in a row, and in those 3 wins, they've beaten Buffalo and Kansas City. Pretty impressive. Defenses can improve as the season goes along. Who knew? Maybe something will happen with Washington's defense down the stretch. A couple of things real quickly about this game, including the end-of-game situation. First, the Bills are in big trouble. You know, they needed that game last night. That was a desperate spot for them at 5-4. They are 5-5 now. And what's really troubling, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, they have coming up, they have the Eagles, Chiefs, Cowboys, and Dolphins still on their schedule. They also have the Chargers on the road. They have a game with the Jets this Sunday and a game with the Patriots. I think in the AFC, you're going to have to get to 10 minimum. That means they've got to win 5 out of their final 7. And again, at Eagles, at Chiefs, at Chargers, at Dolphins, and the Cowboys at home. They're in big trouble. They fired their offensive coordinator today, Ken Dorsey. They had one of the highest scoring offenses and one of the top offenses in the league, and they fired their offensive coordinator, Dorsey. The other thing before I get to the end of game situation that I wanted to mention is Russell Wilson. He played really well last night. I don't think the box score necessarily would do it justice. He threw for 193 yards. He was 24 of 29. But Russell Wilson made a lot of big plays in this game, and they were kind of vintage Russell Wilson plays from back in Seattle, where he used his legs and he created, and you know, he had plays where, you know, he was hemmed in and somehow he got out of it enough to just kind of flick the ball, like push it forward for a completion. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman talked about how much weight he lost in the offseason. I didn't notice it in week 2 when we played them, but that he had gotten in much better shape and wanted to become more of the playmaker that he had been in Seattle last year, not as much. I thought Russell Wilson was really good last night. Again, nobody played like a game that you're going to put into Canton, but that's a tough environment. Buffalo was a desperate football team, and in a 15-15 game, he made plays on a touchdown drive that gave him a 21-15 lead. They missed that extra point. And then down 22-21, they took over deep in their own territory, and he made some big, big plays down the stretch. They got a pass interference call that set up the first of 2 field goal attempts, the first one with 12 men on the field. But I wanted to mention Russell Wilson. I was impressed with him last night. I don't know where this is going for Denver. They're clearly a much better team than they were earlier in the season. They actually have some players on offense. I think Javonte Williams is great, their running back. By the way, the running back that was with Sam Howell at North Carolina. And Sutton had one of the better touchdown catches you'll see all year. But anyway, let me get to the end of game scenario, okay? Because I thought it was really one of those strategic moments that you don't see a lot. And so it starts with, you know, 22-21 Buffalo, and Denver is driving to try to get into field goal range. And they actually get on a 3rd and 10 after a zero coverage blitz sack, another zero coverage blitz, and Russell Wilson throws it downfield and it draws a pass interference. So they're at Buffalo's 17-yard line with 29 seconds to go. And Buffalo has 2 timeouts left. Denver doesn't have any left. Okay, so let me just restate that. 29 seconds to go. Denver's at Buffalo's 17-yard line, down 22-21, so it's a field goal that they're looking for to end the game, hopefully a walk-off field goal, but Buffalo still has 2 timeouts left. So they take a knee on 1st and 10. Buffalo immediately calls a timeout. They take a second knee with 25 seconds to go, and Buffalo calls their 3rd and final timeout, and there are 24 seconds left in the game. So it's 3rd down and long. It is at the 20-yard line of Buffalo with 24 seconds to go, and neither team has a timeout left. So Denver wants to kick a walk-off field goal, but Buffalo has prevented that by using their 2 timeouts. And now the only way they can kick off a true walk-off field goal is to knee it again and then rush the field goal team out in rush mode and kick it with the clock winding down. And hopefully that's, you know, if it's not the exact final play, it's close enough to just a couple of seconds left and they leave Buffalo with no time left. So it was interesting from this standpoint, and that is, because it's 3rd down, you can't take a knee and then take a 4th knee. Right? On 4th down, you can't take a knee. Their plan by starting the taking the knees was, we'll take a knee, we'll wind the clock down to 3 seconds, we'll take another knee, and we'll send the field goal team out, and they'll kick a game-winning field goal. But Buffalo decided smartly to use their timeouts. And so Buffalo, on third down, it was interesting, and I was sitting there watching this thinking, I think they should snap it to Russell Wilson. He should roll right out of the pocket, and he should throw the ball as far as he can throw it out of the end zone or out of bounds. Burn 7 or 8 seconds on the play. Send your field goal team out without having to rush the field goal team. Kick a field goal, and when the field goal goes through, there will be like 13 seconds left, 14, 13, 12, something like that. And then if... you know, if Josh Allen from the 25-yard line can complete a massive play down the field out of bounds because they need the clock to stop, and they get a field goal team off, you know, a field goal off in that amount of time, so be it. But I'm not going to rush my field goal team out there and have it be one of those fire drill field goal deals. Well, it's not what they did. They took the knee. They took the knee and they went fire drill field goal. Here comes their field goal team rushing out. They, by the way, were so well prepared for this. They had done it at the end of the first half. Ben Kotwicka, by the way, is the special teams coach for Denver. Remember him? He was the special teams coach here from 2014 through the 2018 seasons under Jay Gruden. They had done this at the end of the first half. I actually tweeted out, what an impressive, you know, fire drill kind of field goal operation that was with no timeouts left, and they got it off just in time. Now, 24 seconds taking the knee, you're going to have enough time to get everybody on, but it's still in rush mode. So they chose to go that route, and they were in rush mode, and Will Lutz missed the kick with about 6 seconds to go in the game. It was wide right, 41-yarder. But Buffalo, also in field goal rush, you know, defensively mode, they had 12 men on the field. I've thought about this several different ways. One of the things that I thought of is that it may have been smarter for McDermott, Sean McDermott, the Bills coach, to not call those timeouts so quickly. Or not to call his last timeout so quickly, but after the second down kneel, take it down to like 16 or 17 seconds and call the timeout rather than calling it with 24. Because at that point, then Buffalo is going to have to probably decide to kick the field goal on that play or take, you know, the snap, run around, throw it through the back of the end zone. But when you do that, you're also risking a penalty, which would come with a 10-second runoff. You know, a lot of things can happen. So I did think maybe McDermott should have called the timeout with like 17 seconds left instead of 24. And then Denver would have thought, do we really want to take a knee and try to barely get this kickoff? No. They would have probably kicked it right then and there, and Buffalo would have gotten the ball back with 13 seconds to go. But anyway, it was an interesting – I don't think I've seen a situation like that at the end of a game where both teams are out of timeouts, one team's down to their final down before a fourth down kick, and, you know, the clock's going to be tight. Well, the bottom line is they rushed him and he missed, but they also rushed Buffalo and they had 12 men on the field. And then when they were able to calm down after the 12 men on the field and a shorter kick, he drilled it through the uprights. Interesting situation. I don't know, maybe to me, not to you guys. Denver 4-5, Buffalo in big trouble right now at 5-5. This quick tweet that I wanted to read, it came from Dave. Dave wrote, "For the reasons you stated, I agree with you that it was correct not to go for two at the end of the game." We're talking about Washington, Seattle. "But there's another reason not mentioned. Even if Washington were successful on a two-point PAT, this would have enabled Seattle to use all four downs throughout their final drive." Yeah, I don't think I mentioned that. That's a really good point, Dave. It's a part of it, too. I never considered that they would go for two when De'Ami Brown scored with 52 seconds left. I think it would have been 100% the wrong decision. Seattle had timeouts left. Washington only had one, and therefore, you know, you're putting the game essentially on that one play, a less than 50-50 play, because if you miss, it is game over. If you make it, it's not game over. As I described yesterday with Tommy on the show, going for two with 52 seconds left is going for the lead. It's not going for the win. Anyway, but to your point, Dave, the other part of it is, if you are successful in making the two-point conversion, Seattle now has to use all four downs because they can't punt it. Now, they didn't need four downs anyway, but the point is, if it's a tie game and you get off the field on that third and four instead of allow DK Metcalf to be open on that slant for that big play, well, they're going to punt it on fourth down. They're not going to go for it on fourth down. So, excellent point. Really appreciate that. From Jason on Twitter, Sheehan, who cares if Hal's played one more game than everybody else? He's leading the league in passing yards. Stop picking nits. That was funny. I appreciate the tweet. You can follow me on Twitter at KevinSheehanDC. Yeah, all I said yesterday, and I think I said this with Tommy. I know I said it on the radio show. I just pointed out that, yes, Sam is leading the league in passing yards. However, there are several quarterbacks right below him who have played one less game. C.J. Stroud is exactly 157 yards behind Sam Howell, but he's only played nine games. So it's average yards passing per game that you want to look at when you have, you know, teams that have their bye weeks at different times and don't have the same number of games played. In that particular category, Sam, it's still impressive, but his 278.3 yards per game passing number is fifth in the league behind, you know, three quarterbacks who have played nine games. And actually, believe it or not, Cousins, you know who played eight games before he tore his Achilles, in terms of average passing yards per game, is second in the league behind Stroud. I think some of the frustration from some of you, I guess, was, you know, don't talk about C.J. Stroud as an MVP candidate and not mention our guy. Our guy's leading the league in passing yardage. Yeah, he is. C.J. Stroud, if you're just looking at the numbers, C.J. Stroud's having a better year than Sam Howell. It's okay. I mean, Sam Howell's having a really good season and an unbelievable stretch of three games in a row, as we've talked about, 1,260 passing yards in the last 3 weeks. I mean, eight touchdowns, you know, an incredible completion percentage, you know, 69-plus percent. But in terms of the year Stroud is having, Stroud right now is, you know, Sam's QBR number is still 21st in the league at 47.5. Now, a lot of that has to do with the Buffalo game and the Giant game and the games before that came before the last three with all of the sacks. C.J. Stroud's QBR is 63.3. C.J. Stroud's got 15 touchdowns, two picks. Sam's got 17 touchdowns, nine picks. You know, Sam right now, in terms of touchdown passes, is tied for fifth in the league with 17. And he's been excellent. I mean, I'm not knocking Sam at all. I mean, if you've been listening to this, you know, show over the last 3 weeks, I have gone, you know, all in on Sam's performances here over the last 3 weeks, which leads me to this. And then we'll get to John Keim. So I did this on radio this morning where I basically said, look, where are you in Sam Howell? Are you all in, or are you still thinking that if we get to April and we've got like a top 10 to top 15 pick and it's a quarterback rich draft right now with the likes of Caleb Williams and Drake May and Jaden Daniels and Michael Penix Jr. You know, right now, like the latest order has basically Caleb Williams 1, Drake May 2, and then now you see Jaden Daniels kind of moving ahead of Penix Jr. in a lot of the mock drafts. You know, we've got a lot of flip-flopping to go between now and April, but I just asked the question on, you know, do you even need to think that come April you'll be looking at quarterbacks? And we put that out as a poll question. You know, if they end up in the top half of the draft, should they target a quarterback? 90.2% at this point, no. And we took calls in the 90% of the calls. We got our guy. We know it already after 10 games this year, 11 overall. So I'm going to ask, you know, John what he thinks, you know, when he comes on. My answer to this question as to whether or not, you know we've got him. You know, it's over. We got our quarterback. We're good. Forget the draft. The draft should be about adding an offensive lineman or, you know, a Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia. Can you imagine that guy on this team? That would be fun. My position hasn't changed with respect to the long term. Clearly, if you've been listening, you know how promising I think the last 3 weeks have been and how the trend is his friend. Like, it has been really, really high-level quarterbacking the last three games. I mean, I think I've graded him out as an A-minus for all three games. Bieniemy, I give a lot of credit to Bieniemy. I love what they've done with Sam in terms of getting him into a style of play that I think suits him. And I am looking forward to Sam against Dallas, against San Francisco, against the Jets. You know, and I hope these games are meaningful games somehow for Washington, like they're still mathematically alive, because those will be the three best defenses they have faced. These last three games against the Eagles, Patriots, and Sunday against Seattle are not against, you know, at this point, yeah, Philadelphia included, top flight defenses. They're not this year. You know, in New England's, they caught, you know, the week after, you know, an injury to their best defensive player. So I am looking forward to, like, the Thanksgiving Day game against Dallas. They're a bona fide top 10 defense. Jets, 49ers down the road. But, you know, I want to see the rest of it. Like I said yesterday, 3 weeks in a row is great, and it is a good trend, and it is starting to speak to some level of consistency. But that Giant game was still only 3 weeks ago. You know, that Buffalo game was only 2 months ago or month and a half ago or whatever it was. But, yeah, you know, the good news, as I've said multiple times, we don't have to make up our minds today. I'm not going to make up my mind, but I have been very, very impressed with Sam Howell over the last three games. And I think one of the real, you know, the personality part of it, the work ethic part of it, the loving football part of it, the coachability part of it, we know we have that. We've known that for a while. Everybody has said that about him. The physical tools he's had, like, that was never a question. Like, you know, I had somebody, I think, on radio this morning say to me, you know, you keep kind of talking about the character and the gamer and the gritty like he's Taylor Heinicke. No, please. You guys know, and that's not a fair thing. I've said all along, there's not a comparison between Sam Howell's physical abilities and Taylor Heinicke's. You know, we'll see if he's got the rest of it when they start playing actual games, but he's got a much better arm than Taylor Heinicke. He is a better physical prospect, much more so than Taylor Heinicke. And we've seen a lot of that play out, for sure. Would I love if he were 6'3 instead of 6 feet? Yes, true. I think that may be one of the reasons that right now he's not, you know, super comfortable or super successful as a pure drop back in the pocket quarterback. He's much better, as we've seen the last 3 weeks, in quick game and getting outside the pocket. But, man, just the last couple of games, whew, really impressive. And the off-schedule, the creativity, the plays that he's made outside of the pocket, phenomenal. But, no, I am still today in that mode of paying attention to the quarterbacks in the draft, because there were a couple on Saturday. Jaden Daniels, number one. He had one of the great performances I think I've ever seen by a college quarterback. And I've been saying this all year about LSU and about him in particular. It's the best offense that I've seen all year. It's the best quarterback that I've seen all year. And there have been good ones. I mean, Caleb Williams, clearly, Drake May. Penix Jr. throws about as good a deep ball as anybody that'll be in the draft. Bo Nix has been spectacular. Quinn Ewers at times has been really, really good. But Daniels, for me, like, just the thought of him being there at, say, 15 or 14 or 13 or 12, where Washington picks today before Sam plays these final seven games, yeah, I would be still interested in him and in the draft. Or maybe Caleb Williams with a trade up. Or Drake May if he slipped a little bit. Who knows? But it's certainly been fun to watch him the last 3 weeks, and I can't wait to watch the final seven games. There you go. John Keim next after these words from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This segment of the show is brought to you by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name, Kevin Sheehan. They'll give you a free estimate right now. 5 years, interest-free, plus buy two, get two free. That's half price on windows. Winter is coming, as Ned Stark once said many years ago in my favorite all-time show, Game of Thrones. And it is coming. It's going to be a cold Thanksgiving. That's in the forecast. And it's going to be a cold and snowy winter, according to all of the forecasters. If you've got older windows, if you've got older windows, he said, call 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. You'll save big on your energy savings, and you'll save big on windows. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. Jumping on with me right now is one of my favorite people to have conversations with about a lot of different things. Oh, boy, if you could have heard the conversation before we started to record this podcast. John Keim is with me, John_Keim on Twitter. So I'm going to start with just this. Is anybody getting fired before the end of the season? And when I say the end of the season, maybe they'll do something with a game left to get a head start on the new hires. But do you see anything happening between now and, say, January 1?
At this point, Kevin, I do not. Because I don't see what you do if you make that kind of a move. And, you know, we were always told that Rivera would get the year, that Josh Harris wants to see, give him a year. And especially, like, if you know, if you're Josh Harris, we can all look at things and say, it's not looking good right now. But what Josh Harris knows also, and I'm sure he's got a lot of opinions right now or thoughts, but he also knows that, well, in the last couple of years, each year they go on this little run. Can they do that again? So I think you're going to wait to see that, and then at that point, if it doesn't happen, you only got a couple games left. Like, what's the point at that point? Is it just to kind of give fans some satisfaction? That doesn't really help anything here. I think the other question then is, if you did it now, so but my point is, like, I think he wants to give him the year to measure him, to measure Rivera under his terms, not under what happened under Dan Snyder, because as we know, there's a lot of crazy stuff, and we can sit there and pick apart the coaches. They didn't win. I get all that, and that's why they're in a spot where they have to win now. But if you're Josh Harris, what you know is that that other owner was crazy and not a good person to work, not an easy person to work for, not a productive person to work for. So why would you only measure him under that prism when he hasn't worked for you? So I think he wanted to give him the ear for that. So that's one part of it. And then I think the other part of it, who would take over? Because, you know, I know, like, there's a, oh, well, let Eric Bieniemy. Well, you're, first of all, if you really want Bieniemy to be a head coach, most of the time, 90% of the time at least, an interim coach is not going to make it. And, you know, good for Antonio Pierce for what he's doing Las Vegas. But that doesn't always happen. That rarely happens, right? And you know, shoot, Rich Bisaccia did a good job with the Raiders, did not get the job afterwards. And if you want Bienemy to get that job, I think the best way for him to do that is to stay as an offensive coordinator and prove what he can do there. And if you think he's good for Howell's development, that's where you want him to stay, because that's where he's, that's where he'd be best served in that role. So then who takes over? So I think that's also part of it, is that aspect. So I think it's all of those things tied together. So no, I do not expect anything. But here's the other part. Like, if they lose the next four games, who the heck knows, right? And, you know, at that point...
Well, especially if they were to actually lose to the Giants, a team that is clearly not interested in winning. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're losing to you know...
That's
to Tommy DeVito and that like, then, you know, what are you going to do? But I don't see anything, because I just don't know. I don't think that's what they. I don't. I know that's not what they want to do.
You know, you actually brought up. I don't think this is what you would bet on, but you actually brought up that, you know, the patience also includes seeing what he can do and seeing if he can make a run. But I would ask you, to what end? Like, you don't think that there's any chance that Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio and this coaching staff are going to be back next year, do you?
I don't. I think clearly it's a long shot now. And I would also think, listen, I think if you, it certainly is a long shot. So I'll just say it certainly not, doesn't.
I mean,
doesn't
barring
feel
a
like
Super Bowl, barring right. an NFC right. Championship or Super Bowl run, would, which, yeah.
Right. I think it would take a lot. And now, could you see, like, are there ways you can parcel that out? If you say, like, okay, Let's say they get hot and they win nine games and they win a playoff game and Sam Howell looks like the guy. But what we know is Josh Harris likes a general manager in charge and then the coach, right? That's the way he prefers the setup. So would they do something even in that way? And then would you say, okay, you got the offensive side right. What about the defensive side? Because the defensive side isn't fixed, then that's all part of the equation too. So I think it's, you know, they certainly are very much, at this point, you'd have to say a long shot. And, you know, unless they turn around, and the problem is, like, while the offense looks like they're improving, the defense is not. And so that's a big part of the problem. So, and the big plays allowed. I mean, that hasn't changed. And do you think it's going to change? Because if it doesn't, you're playing good teams coming up, and it's going to be a big problem. So it's clearly a long shot at this point.
I mean, we're gonna get to the conversation of the moment right now, which also is part of the conversation of the future, which is Sam Howell and Eric Bieniemy, et cetera. But I just want one more on sort of the big picture on fast forwarding to, you know, January, whatever, after the season finale. Are you hearing any names on GMs, coaches, but GMs first? And taking it back a step, is there somebody that you think is advising Harris right now on the candidates or that pool of candidates that he should be putting together to interview once the season ends?
All right, so I don't know who. I haven't heard any names because, for my purposes, what I have to do right now, it's I have too many other things to go down right now to start to, and I also think, you know, like, shoot, if they beat Seattle, which was a very realistic possibility, and a couple plays, and you got that, now you're 5-5, and now things look a little bit different. The possibilities look different, right? And so, you know, if you're Harris, I don't think you're going to want that stuff out. But even though we've, you know, the whole goofy trading picks for Bill Belichick thing, like, come on. But so I don't know what they've done. Is somebody advising them? There's no way a guy like that who has experience in professional leagues doesn't already have a list of people. Listen, if he wasn't, they've had this in the past. There have been times in the past where, like, I know that they have the list of possibilities just in case. Most times you have, right? It's like that would not be unusual at all, because you have to plan for it. You can't get to the end of December and say, okay, well, it looks like we're not going to keep him. Now what? This guy has not made his money by being unprepared. So, you know, that's, nobody has told me specifically, though. I know that he's talking to people, you know, and I know that whether about what, you know, about the NFL, about being an owner, about, you know, analyzing things. So whether it's just specifically about this, I don't know, but, like, I can't imagine that it's not happening. It has to be happening. How is it not?
I mean, plus, I mean, he's a sports guy. He owns sports teams. He was a minority shareholder in the Steelers. He's got to have a person or a group of people saying, here's the direction you go in creating the pool of candidates for the person that's going to be. Because I do think, you know, based on what I've heard, that they are going to go in that direction, which is hiring a lead football person / GM to go that route. Yeah.
Right.
Which will be
nice. I mean, that's listen, he's on record as saying that his setup is GM, then hire the coach.
Yep.
So that's what he's done with the Devils. It's what he did with the 76ers. It's what he's ultimately going to do here. So, I do think that there are people, because sometimes you may have people who call you or text you and ask you a question like, why are you asking me that? And it doesn't have to be about anything, you know, not specifically about this, but about some other things like, okay, is this somebody who's doing some quote-unquote investigative work for the owner? I don't know. And it's one of those like, you know, they probably wouldn't tell you anyways, and so that's fine. But you have to be prepared. Again, it doesn't mean it's going to happen, but you have to at least be ready for the possibility. And if you're not, you're doing a disservice to your franchise, and I don't think that's what this guy is going to do. And you know, I mean, he knows people in the league, right? And he knows he's a sports guy. He knows what leadership looks like. He knows what he's looking for in the people that he's hiring to lead his team. So that's all. So like, I don't doubt for a second that he's got. You know, you have to be prepared because. Because the worst thing you do is you tear up the list if these guys win six in a row, right? All right, so well, you didn't need it.
I think it's got to be more than six in a row because six in a row doesn't take you to the end of the regular season. But I don't think they're going to win six in a row.
I know, of course.
All right, let's talk about the team. So where are you on Sam Howell? Have you decided?
I mean, I've always thought the kid could be good. I mean, going into the season, just – some of the stuff that I liked about him, I always felt translated well. And I go back, you know, we were talking off the air about Kirk Cousins. I go back to Cousins.
Don't tell people that off the air we were talking about Kirk Cousins. You know how much that triggers people. Why did you do that? I'm going to have to edit this out. No, I won't. All right. Keep going.
Yeah, well, that's Kevin Sheehan, S-H-E-H-A-N.
I don't think I brought him up. I think you brought him up.
No, we were just talking about, and just so people know, it was about like it's a shame the guy got hurt. So
yeah,
he's playing really well. We were talking
about some other things too. But anyway, go ahead.
That was the primary thing.
Okay.
Anyways, my point in that is they're different style of quarterbacks. But what I always liked about Cousins, he's very and they're again they're different people too. But Cousins was like he's always studying. He's very smart. The coaches like love his arm talent because it's quick twitch, right? And not that he has a cannon arm, but it's a quick twitch arm. Quick, you see it, boom, go. And Howell has some traits where like, okay, they're tough, right? And Howell's got the toughness. He works his ass off, and he studies a lot. He's a big time studier, and he's got really good leadership skills without trying to be a leader. People just want to follow him. And so like, you look at, like, how does a guy go from, like, a mid-round pick to becoming a quality NFL starter? And, like, I look over, okay, that's what he did. This guy's got some of that stuff in him. So I thought, like, going into the year, that my question was, like, I think he's a starter in this league. The question is, to what level? That's what we didn't know. And so, you know, the sacks early on especially were a major problem. And, if you know, right, the last three games, they've done a great job. He's done a great job getting rid of the ball. Do all those things and limiting it at, because history shows if your sack rate is at a certain percentage, it's going to be tough to have a long career.
Right.
Productive NFL passers, even if they're sacked a lot, their sack percentage is not nearly as high as what his had been in those first seven games. Definitely on him, definitely on scheme, definitely on protection. So it's a mixed bag. But the bottom line, it was way too high and better lately. So I think over the last several weeks, what you've seen the growth in too, is he's become a really good playmaker. And, you know, and I think what I like is that he hasn't let the rush disturb his game. And there are sometimes I think like he might check down a little bit early now, but it, but it's not all the time. It's not the John Beck versus the 49ers, Roy Helou 75 passes. You know, it's like, okay, there's a play the other day. I was just watching it before we were talking, and it was like, okay, McLaurin's probably open here. You probably could have forced that, not even forced it, you could have gotten that in there. But you're starting to feel the rush a little bit, so you check it down, you get 3 yards, you live for the next down. I'm okay. You know, I mean, there are a couple times like that, but it's not consistent like that. He does look to make plays, and I think that's a hard thing to instill in a quarterback. So I love that he has that. So I like him. I mean, if they said we're going to build around him for next year, regardless of the coaches, I'm like, that's fine with me because I think the kid can play. You know, I do think I want to see how it looks the rest of the year. You're facing some really good teams and pass rushers coming up. I think that's going to be a tremendous test for them in a good way, because I think you can learn a lot more about him and the direction of all this. And so I like where he's at. Like I mean, I do think, again, limit the sacks if he continues to do that, but I think he can be a solid starter in the NFL.
How much credit for this 3 week run, which has been, you know, the only 3 week run, the consistency of his season here in 2023 have been the last three games, you know, the Eagles game, the Patriots game, and the Seahawks game. How much credit for the reduction of sacks, for just the overall performance, do you give to Eric Bieniemy?
I think it certainly plays a part in there, because there have been some times where I think some of the things that they were hoping to see early in the Giants game, you're seeing a little bit earlier now. Some, you know, I wouldn't even say it's more crossing routes. I think there's some built-in, as Ron Rivera likes to say, the extended handoffs, and maybe a little bit more of those. But I also, you know, so I think that's definitely part of it. And it does seem like at times where it feels like, and I have to go back and watch in some of these games, like, okay, there are some built-in answers here, right? Or just like, you know, where your checkdowns are better. And is that because...
Definitely that, compared to, say, the Giants game, as an example.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think Bieniemy has to be a part of that, because he's the offensive coordinator. I think if I'm going to say sometimes, and not if you're putting him in a position where you think, like, you're not helping the kid here, well, I think you can't just say he doesn't get any credit, because I think he does. Definitely think he does. I think the game plans have been good. But I think you know, you look at the change inside with Larson and Chris Paul. Is that a tremendous change? Like, I think Larson is, I think they've been a little bit more stout at times. Not, I don't think they're perfect by any means. I just think that Larson has been more stout inside, which helps form a better pocket for a guy who's 6'1". And I think with the interior, you need that for him. Because, you know, again, I heard a lot about the Drew Brees model in New Orleans, and how you know, they built that with strong interior play because of his size. It gives him a better chance to be in the pocket and with vision. And I think that he's getting that. I also think, Kevin, especially last week, I felt like, and sometimes it leads to him getting out of the pocket early, but I feel like he's feeling and sensing the pressure and seeing it better than he was early in the year. And he's ready to react quicker. And there were times early in the year, like, I didn't feel like he was ready to react from it. So he may take a certain stance and maybe not be ready to get out of there. Like, he, you know, and maybe it was like in Carolina, you're like, okay, this opening here, I can get through there, because in college I did. Then you find out in the NFL you can't, right? Because they're quick and they're fast. But I feel like he's a little bit quicker to recognize this, which then helps him avoid it. And I think he did a good job of that the last couple games, of avoiding sacks just with his reaction time, how quickly he's getting to maybe a second read or to the checkdowns to avoid stuff. So I think it's always a combination of things, and it was a combination before, but I do think a lot of it was, okay, he's a young quarterback, and you have a line that certainly was not very good, but you had a line like that, which maybe for a veteran quarterback would have been okay, because they're going to go through the progressions faster, blah, blah, blah. But for him, he needed more. He needed better. And I think they certainly know that now. So I think there's a combo effort, but I do give Howell himself a lot of credit, because some of the big plays that have happened the last couple weeks, those are more off schedule. So,
yeah, no,
you know,
he's been terrific off schedule last two games in particular.
But I do think, like I said, I do think you have to give Bieniemy credit, because he's the one there. I think there have been some times where they've gotten into a better rhythm with things. So So, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the last three games in particular coming off that Giant game, the emphasis on the quick game, especially early, and getting him into a rhythm and getting him confident, and putting a defense a little bit on its heels a little bit has really been beneficial. It's funny because I've mentioned this, and, you know, I don't want anybody to think that this is a defense of Ron Rivera, because I have not defended Ron Rivera other than for, you know, the leader he appears to be and the likability factor with people in football, because I don't think he's done a great job coaching this team here the last couple of years. But, you know, I think after that Buffalo game, I'm pretty much sure that I know, and I think you do too, that he said we can't continue to do this. It's almost hard to evaluate him if he's going to get sacked at this ridiculous rate. We've got to come up with a way to get the ball out quicker. And I give Bieniemy some credit for that.
And
Ron probably gets some credit for that too.
Oh, definitely. And because things like that, like in the past, when he says stuff like that, you know, in the past it was always with Scott Turner, it was, you know, oh, we need to get back to doing this. And that meant running the ball, and then next week you'd see a lot more run.
Yeah.
And with Bieniemy, it's not, he doesn't say that with Bieniemy, but that is the part, like finding ways to protect him. If you're going to, like, again, if you're going to call a lot of passes, you have to find ways to protect this kid. When they throw in as many passes out of five-man protections, more than anybody, I think. And that's a Kansas City style, too. But you have Patrick Mahomes. And so, like, they do chip a lot on the edges. But that's why, like, the reason they made the change after New York is because the protection calls kept breaking down. And then, you know, Nick Gates, that's on the center. That's partly on the center. You know, because Sam Howell has a role in that, too. But it's a lot on the center, and especially up front. And then but I think the stoutness, for lack of a better word, with Larson, who weighs about 30 pounds more than Gates, that also matters. And not that, you know, that neither, you know, Larson's not some all-pro center and Nick Gates is not some all, but you have to at least be able to give something, and that's what Larson has given them. And I don't even know, like, how he grayed out. I just know that the pockets in the interior are better. And there were sometimes against, like, Philadelphia. Philadelphia has a kind of an undisciplined pass rush, and they leave gaps, and they consistently did that. But like last week, there were times where they did a pretty good job against the interior, and if the ends are up, then it gives Howell a chance to find a gap and get out of there, and he's done that. And going back to, like, the sometimes the scheme, like, there are plays where there was a play the other day where there's a two-deep look, and you had McLaurin breaking on a deep post, and it's there. But one of the guards, I think it may have been Cosme, was getting shoved back, and so I don't know if Howell could see it.
Yeah.
Or if he could buy enough time to see it. And they had a concept where, like, Samuel's running across or taking the other safety's vision away, so it's going to be there. But the safety's getting pushed back. So then while Howell improvised on the play, the initial concept was really good. It's just that the protection didn't help him. He wasn't sacked. And I think they end up with there's something to Gibson, I think, but it was there. The concept was good. And so you have to, like, just because the play didn't end up that way, you look at the concept too and evaluate it, and it was good.
Yeah, I think actually it's funny. I took a call on this during the radio show, and this is, you know, you just mentioned something that made me think of it, and that is, it's okay if Sam Howell turns out to be a true West Coast distributor quarterback. We've seen a lot more of that over the last three games, and he's had the most consistent performances of the season. And there are, you know, the pure drop, and I'm talking about, you know, third down and long dropbacks, not first down, first and 10 play action, five step seven. That's different, especially if you've already established some of the quick game stuff, and we've seen that over the last couple of weeks. It's very possible that he won't be a great in the pocket, you know, pure drop back quarterback. He's not good at that right now. I think we can all agree that's not his strength right now. Doesn't mean that he won't get better at it, But I think there's people that get hung up on the way they're, you know, the pass run ratio, the number of quick game throws. You know, it was 30-17 on Sunday. I went back and looked at all of them. Of the 47 that were called, 30 were quick game screens, sprint outs, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the 17 pure dropbacks were a mix of some of the first and 10 take a shot off play action with more max protect. But it's okay if he ends up – Joe Montana was a pure West Coast quarterback. Now, eventually you got to be able to throw from the pocket on third and long, understood. But it's okay if that's how he ends up being very successful. I hope that people understand there shouldn't be pushback to that style of quarterback.
No, there shouldn't be, and because he's shown that he can make plays like that. I mean,
yeah.
Most of the big plays the last 2 weeks have come off of that ability.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, you have to, right? But that's why you have to build a strong interior, as much as anything, I think a strong interior wall for him.
Yeah.
So that way, like, you know, obviously you want a good offensive, you want good linemen everywhere. But for his style, and I think, like, you know, now if you're an end, a defensive end, you can always compensate for that. Like, if you're getting upfield and they're not getting penetration side, now he's got places to go. And he can still maintain vision. He can still kind of slide a little bit and maintain the vision or see something, right? And so, you know, he definitely has to learn in the pocket. There are sometimes some of the movement can be really good. And then sometimes it's like, you know, this is where it's like this is becomes instinctual. And the throw he had to McLaurin last week where he slides in the pocket to the left, but he's sliding into pressure. Now, he makes a hell of a throw, but he's tripping over, he's almost tripping on his guy, but he makes a hell of a throw. And so, like, that's where it's like, you don't have to move quite that much. But that's like, there becomes like an individual play-by-play coaching basis for him. But there are so many, there are a lot of things that you just can't coach. Like, who can coach that, okay, you have a blitzer coming here, step up, tuck the ball, look downfield and then flip a sidearm throw to the running back.
Oh God, that was my favorite. That was my favorite throw of the game.
It is. It was phenomenal because I mean, so like there are times
he actually didn't. He actually didn't even step up. He stepped to the left a little bit to get his arm to an angle where he could flick it out there 30 yards to Gibson. It was great.
But he starts to tuck. He starts to tuck the ball, and you know. I remember back in the day, Robert was a running quarterback, and there were times he would tuck the ball and drop his eyes 10 yards in the backfield.
Yeah.
And that's something that he said he had to work on. They wanted to work on it because, you know, like the goal is keep the play alive. And if you notice, because of Howell's ability to run, what are people doing? Both those times, like the passes to Robinson, they're coming up at him because they're afraid of he's not Lamar Jackson. But he can run, and he can hurt you with his legs. So, like, then now you've got Robinson right there. So now you know he can do that. Are you going to stay back? If so, he'll just run. And so I like that ability from him. And just I have a story coming out later this week about some of this stuff, but, like, I was talking to, was it Kurt Warner maybe, about this, and just the ability to basically not feel the rush, but also to stand there and be able to be aggressive down the field. Like, guys who are quarterbacks, you hear that a lot from them, that ability. He has that. He's willing to be that guy. You know, I mean, the throw to De'Ami Brown late in the game was terrific. Now, having said that, if he could have probably hit him in rhythm on that play, but it would have been at, like, maybe the 10-yard line, it wouldn't have been a touchdown because it most likely, but in rhythm, he probably could have had him. And in hindsight, it may have burned more clock and you go into overtime.
Yeah.
Or whatever, but it was a, you know, but he is willing to make certain throws, and you know, I joke about John Beck, but like we saw what happened to a guy, just a pedestrian quarterback like John Beck, 10 sacks against Buffalo the next week, 13 passes to the running back.
Yeah.
You do not see that with Howell. You see the guy still playing his game, and I love that because it shows you that he hasn't altered who he is as a quarterback. He didn't let it get to him. And so I think that's where I'm like, now build, you know, I want to see more, like build the wall in front of him and give him a more of a chance, give him some more, you know, you say weapons, everybody wants a lot of weapons, but a more diverse cast of weapons. You know, get a younger tight end in here who can really move, you know, things like that. that you can, you know, I'm sure they'll do that in the offseason, regardless of who's here, just to give him more, give him more, because he has shown that he has that. Guys like playing with him, you know? I mean, they liked Heinicke, but they recognized his limitations. They knew what they were with him.
Of course.
They knew what he was, but they liked him. But they understood the limitations.
Yeah, this is Howell, a different physical being.
Correct. And with Howell, I think they realize, like, this kid can play, and they like blocking. They like who he is. He's a natural. He's a leader without trying to be a leader.
Yeah. I'm looking at on the All-22, the De'Ami Brown thing. And I mentioned yesterday on my recap that it was a situation for Seattle. One of the reasons he had the time that he had is they really weren't. They were in contain rush mode.
Yeah.
They didn't want him to get out of the pocket and make a play. They were very much in sort of a contain rush with four. It was actually borderline three kind of people rushing, because one was really in contain. But he had a chance, you're right, to hit De'Ami in stride out of his break.
Yep.
It may not have scored on that, and it may have been worked to their benefit, because they could have.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Then the 2-point conversion attempt would have been more of a conversation versus.
Yeah.
Okay, you would have lost by two instead of three, but the point is, like, he did have that, but he stayed with it. Now, what I like about him too, and I do think even on that one, like, he could have had it. He had four seconds to throw. So yes, they're in contain. We've seen teams still get home on those situations before.
True.
And I like that he maintains, there's a calmness to him when he plays. And I like that.
Oh, love it.
You know, and so that's why, like, you add all that up, I'm like, yeah, I mean, the only way I'd say no is, like, let's say they end up making a change, and new coach comes in and they have a shot at a guy that this guy loves in the draft. I don't know who that would be. But I don't think they're going to have that shot. But, you know, is that what you do? I don't think you have to, because he has shown that, like, okay, see where it goes. And if it doesn't work in the next year, you can get someone else. But then build up that line.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
get some stoutness in there.
I mean, I talked a little bit about it in the open. My position is this. There's so much that's promising the last 3 weeks, but we're also 3 weeks removed from a pretty wretched game, and a month and a half removed from one that was even worse than that, you know, against Buffalo. And 11 or 10 games, you know, this year is a small sample size. The good news is they don't have to make a decision today. We don't have to declare our position today. Seven more games, and I think you said this, and I emphasized this yesterday, which is one of the reasons I was upset that they actually lost this game. I think it's just going to be a better measure of him if these games matter down the stretch mathematically to a playoff berth.
Sure.
That's
a good point.
Yeah, it's just a better way. If they're playing the last three or four completely out of contention, and now it's like, all right, well, let's see what Chris Rodriguez looks like more. Let's try some young players in spots. You're not getting the full experience. Doesn't mean that you can't evaluate them, but it's kind of like the Dallas game was for me at the end of last year. You know, it wasn't a game they had to win. I want them to play in games they have to win. I think it's a better measure.
And I think that's the good point. I do think that if they came down to it, I think they're going to play who they're going to play largely to see what he can do.
Fair.
And continue seeing
they
that
didn't,
out.
They didn't in the season finale last year. They sat a bunch of people.
No, I think they're in a different situation. Right.
I agree.
But I do think, like, he's been in a lot of situations against good teams already where he's had to do something in the fourth quarter.
He's delivered.
And, you know, Philly a couple times. And I think what I want to see is, like, even against the Giants, bad, horrible first half. But, you know, he and some of the calls were adjusted. And the funny thing in that game, like, I didn't think the game plan in the first half was different when I rewatched it than I saw it live. However, there were still things they did better in the second half, called more, you know, more fades, more the mesh and all that. So that all helped him. But I also think, like, what I also like about him is he does respond. And so I think that's the mark of a really good competitor, that when he has a bad game, They had a horrible game against Buffalo, and they go out and he has a really good game at Philly. You know, a game that he played well enough to lead them to a win.
Yeah. Look, and, I mean, he did not have a good game in his first game against Arizona and then bounced back with a really good game against Denver.
Yeah, and a comeback game. And then, like, even Chicago, bad game in the first half and then was really good in the second half. There were a couple throws that were, of course, missed, but bounces back. And, you know, and I know, you know, the Giants stink, but their defense is good.
Yeah, well, it was good that day, and it was good the week before against Buffalo. Now they've got injuries.
Exactly, at the time. But that's the other trait that I really like about him is he has that. So I think there's a lot of positives with him. And, I mean, I haven't seen he's as good as they've had. Now, I will say, like, Alex Smith was a different quarterback. So, I mean, different. Yeah, he wasn't going to throw it around and pass regularly for 300 yards. He was he's a very good manager, strong leader, smart player. And that's why they were 6-3 when he was healthy. So he's not the same kind of passer that Howell was.
Right.
But Howell's the best passer they've had since Kirk left. And, you know, I think he's, at this stage in his career, he's further ahead than where Kirk was. Because at this stage, Kirk was
throwing a lot of picks.
Throwing a lot of picks and letting it get to him.
Yeah.
He let him bother him.
Right.
And that was the big thing. Because I remember having a conversation with
Different personality. Different personality.
Right.
This guy's oblivious. This guy's got super quick, short memory. Kirk would obsess over the throws that he missed or the throws that he made that he shouldn't have made. Now, it helped him learn from it and become better. This guy's more like, I've already said it, he's more like Flacco. Like, not stylistically. Flacco could throw the worst ball you've ever seen that gets picked, and he just comes back and makes the exact same throw that the next time, except it's better for a touchdown. Like, I've never in recent years seen a guy more oblivious to the circumstances that he's in playing the game. And I think Sam's got a lot of that, you know. I think that's a positive.
It's absolutely a positive.
Yeah.
As long as like Rex Grossman had that.
Yeah, same.
But Rex threw a lot of picks. And he's just like he couldn't help himself, like, I've gotta take this shot, man.
Yeah.
And he was like a junkie looking for adrenaline shot, right?
No doubt.
Because it's like, I've gotta take these shots off field. And sometimes you're like, Rex, that wasn't a good throw. So what I like that I've seen from Howell lately is especially Sunday, a lot more checkdowns. And when I look at some of the checkdowns, like, you probably could have stayed with the play longer here. But I appreciate that he's looking for that and aware of that, and it's preventing sacks and preventing negative plays, and it's not really altering his game. Like, okay, there's a couple plays here and there. It's not like, but he's still looking to take the shot, right? It's not like he's not gone away from that.
I hear you, and I want to go back and watch some of those on some of, like, early on. There's a first and ten. It's the first pure dropback. I mean, they went quick, and then they went, you know, basically under center, first and ten, play action. And there was some pressure. He nearly threw a pick to Witherspoon. It was actually the next one. He immediately hit Gibson on the check down. Immediately.
Yeah.
Which, it's okay. You know, it was a 3rd and 14. You'd rather end up with 4th and 3 and punting, or 4th and 3 with an option, than 3rd and 23. Or 4th and 23 after another 9-yard sack.
And that's the Alex Smith aspect of the game. Because that's what Alex would do. Like, he understood to manage the situation, and I think that's a big thing. Now, you can go back 1 week, and we saw what happened against New England, where they're lucky that it didn't cost them the game, that interception at the end of the half. Like, that's part of it as well. Like, that's a 1st and 10. I don't think he probably knows what he was thinking at this point, even still. So it's not like we're far removed from some of those plays.
Ron should have called a timeout. Ron should have freaking called a timeout.
And that may be.
That may be,
however, that was a really, really, like, I don't care
throw.
About the timeout.
Terrible.
Like, that's a bad decision.
Terrible.
It wasn't even a bad throw. It's a bad decision.
Bad decision.
And so,
bad everything.
So we're not far removed. And even in the fourth quarter the other day, where he throws two touchdown passes, he almost threw two picks. And
well,
but he didn't. And,
no,
and,
yeah, the well, play the, one, the play before the De'Ami Brown touchdown was, first of all, an incredible job by him just to get a throw off under pressure.
Yeah, yeah.
But he did just chuck it right down the middle of the field, and he was lucky Diggs didn't pick it off.
And there was there was one earlier where it was like, so I think it was Witherspoon faked the blitz, drops and deflects it, but the corner's there for maybe a pick six.
Yeah.
But it's a, you know what it is? It's a long foul ball. That's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it did no harm, no foul. And then he came and makes it, comes and makes throws. Every game you can say, like, oh, this guy got away with that, right?
Right.
It's not like the Heineke living with the horseshoe.
No. He's got far fewer turnover-worthy throws than Heineke
did. No, yeah. He's been really good with that. And that's why I say, like, all those things add up for me as a guy that I want to see more.
Yeah.
And see them do more around him because I think he can play. And I know, like, I don't know. I mean, I would be. I don't know why you wouldn't stick with him. And I know, like, if this group is back, they would. But if you're a new group coming in, like, I'd be excited to have that guy saying, "Listen, let's build in front of him and see where else we can go with this kid." Because
I think if we see six or five out of the final seven games look like the last three, I think everybody will be there, me included. I know you've got to run, but I want to really quickly ask you because this has been. To me, you know, and I went and I watched Ron yesterday. I watched you guys with Ron yesterday pick apart on the defense, try to get some answers. I don't think you guys got any answers because it's Ron, you know, and Ron speaks Ronese. And it bothered me that, you know, he went to these turnovers and these takeaways that I don't even think there have been a lot of takeaways that they haven't gotten. I mean, like he acted like there were all these plays that they've had right there, but they haven't gone their way. Other than the Deron Payne near pick on the deflection by Tuhill, was there another turnover that they had in their hands that I couldn't remember one. Anyway.
Not that I can remember, and I haven't finished watching the defense at talk. I don't remember those. I know, like, in previous games, there certainly have happened. Like, I mean, we saw Emmanuel Forbes, like, against New England, where he had one, and you could call, they could
Fuller,
have called
pass. Fuller on a touchdown to DJ Moore almost had one that could have gone the other way.
So we've seen that. I don't remember from last week, and what I remember is they allow these big plays.
So that's what I want to ask you about. Why are these big plays happening against them this year in such big numbers? Specifically why? I'm going to ask you that when we come back. We need to take a break, but when we come back, John continues and we'll see what his answer is to why has this defense given up the big play as often as they have all year long. We'll get to that right after these words from a few of our sponsors. This segment, as we continue with our good friend John Keim from ESPN, is brought to you by our friends at Due South in Navy Yard, who have a great Thanksgiving option for you. How does apple cider, brine, smoked turkey, cornbread stuffing, shallot, and thyme gravy sound right now? Well, Thanksgiving's right around the corner, and Due South in Navy Yard is going to make your holiday way easier. Their home-cooked dinner packages can serve two up to 200, and will serve as a delicious, easy, crowd-pleasing option for your big day. So don't feel like cooking this year. Give them a shout, check out their menu, and learn more at DueSouthDC.com. All right, we continue with John, and I want to talk specifically about these big plays on defense. What is the issue? Like, the chunk play, the explosives, that is the issue this year. They're giving up way too many of those, and no one out there has specifically explained why. The only thing I've mentioned, and maybe you have too on your pod or, you know, in your column, is they've played more man coverage this year than they played last year. You guys tried to get it out of Ron yesterday, and he just started to speak Ronese, and there was no translator there for it. So why have they been so vulnerable to the big play this year, which has really crushed them on defense?
It has. Now, I will say, like, over the last 4 years, they have given up over, like, the 25-yard or more longer pass plays. They're one of the tops in the league. Last year, the reason why I was optimistic for this defense this year, because last year, after they benched William Jackson, got used to the zone match, they went from being one of the worst teams in those kind of plays to one of the best.
Right.
And, you know, and it was over 8 or 9 games. So it wasn't like a small sample size for them. It was a really good job. And the zone match were playing well. Early this year, I heard like some of the guys were having a harder time with some of the zone match principles. And you're right, they've gone to a little bit more man. And you can say, like, sometimes, Kevin, and to me, it's always the details, right? And what does that mean? Like, so sometimes, for example, and I like Benjamin St. Juice, and I'm going to pick on him a minute.
I do, too.
I like him, and I think he can play in this league. It's always about how do you best use a guy? And so there have been sometimes, like the Chicago game, for example. So if you remember, like, one of the first big plays where the sail route, where the guy goes in and, you know, you turn your head in, corner bites, you turn back out, and it's a long pass play.
Right.
So on that one, he said that he talked about how, like, and I know this because, like, you have inside help there. So you play to your help. You want to be on the outside hip, right? Well, he was too far inside trying to be aggressive and making a play. He was overly aggressive. So, okay, you do that. Well, then the same thing happened against New England. Now, it's a 4th-and-3. The guy's open. Mac Jones just doesn't hit him. And I know for them, because I asked both Ron Rivera and then Del Rio last week, does that concern you that while they didn't hit these, that they were available? And they're like, well, no, because they didn't hit them. Like, and every week there are plays available that you don't get.
Right.
So, but to me, it was troubling because it's a consistent pattern for them. So, but the point I'm bringing up is that he played it the same way he did the Chicago game, which is getting really aggressive inside and getting beat outside. And they're lucky, they're fortunate it didn't happen. So there's details like that. There's missed tackles. Percy Butler in that same game, you have, first of all, it starts with Jamin Davis not filling his gap quick enough, and it was a little stunned up in the middle. He's supposed to be in that gap. That's mistake number one, details. Then Butler, you know, he actually had a nice game the other day until he missed a tackle,
right.
Which is part of the game. I get it. But then against the Patriots on that touchdown, the angle that you take is off, and so you allow him to stay outside. Well, you need to get him to cut back inside where you still have help coming. And if you do, instead of a 64-yard touchdown, it's a 10-yard gain.
Right. Jack called it capping it off. You know, he describes it as capping it off.
Right. So it's the wrong angle. Sometimes with Forbes, it was the eyes. Where are your eyes, right? Sometimes, you know what I mean? Sometimes A.J. Brown makes a one-handed catch, and there's, what are you going to do? So there's always a number of things, but to me, some of this goes back to details. And then, I mean, shoot, you know, were they getting enough production from the defensive line? And the answer is no. And so we see what's happened there. And so I think it's a combination of factors. You know, I mean, Butler is a young player. I think how much better will he get? I don't know. But that's part of the equation for them? I just think that after a while, though, for a fan, you don't want to hear that because it's been like that for a few years, by and large. Like,
not, yeah, and last year, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like last year, they were top 10 in yards and points, and you can say, well, that wasn't, they weren't that good. Well, okay, but that means that you have to look at every team in that top 10 that way. And so were they one of the best defense league? Maybe not, but they certainly weren't one of the worst. And they are now.
Well, they were. I think they were legitimate by most of the advanced metrics. They were right there as a top 10 defense last year with the way they played.
But not only by advanced metrics, but by people in the league that you would talk.
And by watching them. Now, the thing that we didn't like about last year's defense was there weren't enough takeaways, and that was apparently one of the reasons they drafted Emmanuel Forbes.
And I think then it goes back to that he has not. Doesn't mean he won't, but to date, he has not paid off the way they had hoped.
Well, they're playing too much man coverage for him. He likes eyes on the backfield, eyes on the quarterback.
Guys who get takeaways, it's usually with the eyes.
Yeah, now, exactly.
The problem for the hard part for that he's had is there sometimes where he's, you know, where I know they felt like, you know, he's trying to bait guys a little bit too much into throws. Well, you can do that in college more than you can do in the NFL.
Right.
It's harder to do that in the NFL because these guys are really good. And so that's his learning curve. And it wasn't like every big play was Emmanuel Forbes' fault. The Philly game, those were on him, right? He was a part of four of those big plays. And so, again, the details, like in a cover two, you've got to give the guy more of a, you have to reroute much stronger than he did on the one play. And that the reason why, because then it disrupts the timing, but allows the safety to get over the top. And so that's how helping your teammate is. And on the same play where they threw it to Brown, you have Kendall Fuller on the other side rerouting a guy physically, right? And so I saw Forbes do that early in the game. He just didn't do it on that play. So that it's the consistency of the details, to me, that's been a part of the breakdown. And then after that, I can't explain it because I don't know.
Wait to see how they cover the Dolphins in a few weeks. It's funny because you said it, and I agree with you. Like, I watch St. Juice, and I'm like, I think he's a starting corner in this league.
Yeah, I think he is.
He may not be a starting one, but, the throw to Lockett for the touchdown is just a great throw. You know, Geno had some fucking great throws down the stretch Hal did. But the other part of it is, why is he playing outside leverage on third and four against Metcalf? I don't get that. But what
right.
do I know?
And I think, on that one though, like are you talking on the fourth and five one?
No, third and four on the field goal drive.
Oh, the 20, yeah. Well, and I know like for them he's playing, he's got inside help, and so
yeah, there wasn't enough inside help.
No, there wasn't, and so I haven't talked to him about that play, but I know the fourth and five, like he's anticipating a corner route on that one. And so he's playing that, and then you had F.A. Obata dropping into the slant lane and trying to take that away. But Geno was able to pump and then allow Metcalf to run further inside, and Obata stayed a little bit wide. I'm not blaming him, it's just what happened.
Yeah.
And it created the opening for him, and then there was the pass interference. So, and that was a legit call. So, that was a good play by Geno, and then Metcalf is just a big dude. But, it's everything, Kevin, and it's not just, it's certainly not on St. Juice. I like him too, but those are some of the issues that you've seen when you talk about the consistency of the details.
Yeah.
It's that,
sure.
Right? And it's not just him, but those are ones that are very vivid in my head because I talk to him about it, and I like talking to him because he can explain why and what he learned and what he needs to do, and he's really insightful like that, so I like guys like that. But anyway.
All right, well, would have been, I really wanted them to win Sunday. Like, it's the first time since, like, the Buffalo game. Like, the Buffalo game was interesting because they were 2-0, and I'm like, all right, I think they got a shot in this game. And can you imagine if they actually beat the Bills and are 3-0? And then Sunday, I really thought going in they had a chance, and if they'd come out of that with a win somehow, and they didn't, deserve to, because they weren't good enough on defense. But there would have been a completely different conversation about this team had they come out.
That was a game changer.
Yeah.
That was a game changer to me because if you want to think about the playoffs, you had to win that game, regardless of what happens beyond the playoffs, for this group to make it, clearly they wanted to make it. Whether it's the players or the coaches, it doesn't, fans can feel however they want. It doesn't mean anybody's guaranteed to come back or go, right? But you want it. They want to see themselves in the playoffs. But to do that, you had to win that game because now you have Dallas twice, Miami, San Francisco.
Yeah.
You're going to have to win a couple of those games and then make sure you beat the Rams and the Jets, possibly with Rodgers. And they have a really good defense. So who knows?
Yeah.
And so I think that's why, like, the other day was a huge, huge game for them to just, to avoid, to really put yourself in a position where you can legitimately say, hey, now you have a chance to do it. Doesn't mean, like, if they win the next two, they beat Dallas on Thanksgiving, okay, then you can look at it differently.
I think this Thanksgiving Day game against Dallas, John, is actually going to be one of the more interesting games of the season from this standpoint. And they've got a couple of these left. It's going to be the first really solid defense they have faced in a while. You mentioned the Giant defense on that particular day with what the Giants had. They actually were a pretty good defensive team. They had just held Buffalo basically scoreless in three quarters on the Sunday night prior to it. But Dallas is a bona fide top 10 defense. And that's not what Seattle was, not what New England was with their injuries, not what Philly has been this year. And they're going to get that with Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. And by the way, they're going to get that with the Jets on Christmas Eve. They will get that with the 49ers on whenever they play them. I think it's New Year's Eve. So there are three, you know, top 10 defenses, actually in the case of the 49ers and the Jets, top five defenses left on their schedule, which will be, you know, good measuring games for Sam and this offense as well. I'm looking forward to those games. And here's the thing. I actually expect them to play well against those teams. I do.
I do too. I think, and that's where I say, like, I think it is a good measuring stick. I hate that phrase. I mean, not as so much of the team, but for Howell's development, right? It's a good, because it is a, they have a good pass rush, and, you know, it's, it, but I think it, they have a chance, like, he has a chance to go back and kind of reestablish yourself in front of a national audience, too, because he has been playing well. And the last time people saw this team was the Bears game, and which did not go well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I think that, I, and they have played pretty, I mean, they beat them last year. So, it is, you know, and they, I don't see any, like, I think it should be, I would think it's a good game. The thing that all, that, well, the thing that, like, even last week against Seattle, I thought they offensively do fairly well against them, but it was always a defense. And, like, I don't trust the defense. They give up too many big plays. And now you're looking at teams that have big play guys.
Right.
And so
Seattle's got big play guys. Seattle's got big play guys.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. That's why I didn't pick them to win last week, because I was afraid of the big plays with the.
I picked them to win, and I bet them on the money line. So I was really upset when it ended. All right. Great job. Per usual, John gives us much more time than anticipated. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Kevin.
John_Keim, everybody, on Twitter. John's got a podcast as well. You can get that wherever you get a podcast. All right, done for the day. Back tomorrow with Tommy, who's doing the Monday-Wednesday schedule this week.